All glories to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur Ki Jai. So before we begin, we're going to chant this Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Pranam Mantra as our verse of the day. But just one note on this song, Yeyanelo Premadana. There is some talk that this Acharya Thakur was actually Advaita Acharya, but I did some research and it's actually Srinivas Acharya as we have it there in the songbook. So anyone who has any misconception of that, you consult the Narottam Vilas and you'll find an incredible description of the relationship between Narottam Das Thakur and Srinivas Thakur, Srinivas Acharya, excuse me. And it's explained there that this is indeed Srinivas Acharya. That's his disappearance. Srinivas' disappearance was what inspired him to write this song. And shortly thereafter, within a year, Narottam himself left his own body. But just a note on it. So, hope this works out. Let's see. So first we will chant this Pranam Mantra of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's. This is, of course, in the songbook as well. And it's good to learn all these Pranam Mantras from the diptych succession. Namo Bhaktivinodaya. Satchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate Namo Bhaktivinodaya Satchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate Namo Bhaktivinodaya Satchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate. Someone else? Namo Bhaktivinodaya Satchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanugavarayate Namo Bhaktivinodaya Satchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanugavarayate Namo Bhaktivinodaya Satchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate. Ladies? Namo Bhaktivinodaya Satchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya. Ladies? Namo Bhaktivinodaya Satchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate Namo Bhaktivinodaya Satchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate Namo Bhaktivinodaya Satchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate Namo Bhaktivinodaya Satchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Namaha. Obeisances. Bhaktivinodaya. Unto Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Satchit Ananda Namine. Known as Satchit Ananda. Gaura. Of Lord Chaitanya. Shakti. energy. Sarupaya. Unto the personified. Rupa Anugavaraya. Who is a revered follower of Srila Rupa Goswami. Te. Unto you. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Satchidananda Bhaktivinod, who is the transcendental energy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is a strict follower of the Goswamis headed by Srila Rupa. So, time is limited, so we'll continue. There's so much about Bhaktivinoda Thakur that is really impossible to fully describe his glories, his life, and what to speak of his teachings, which he wrote over 100 books, and then also the songbook. So I'm going to give a little outline of his life, and it's all based on this wonderful book by Rupa Vilas Prabhu named The Seventh Goswami. I highly recommend it. It's also in the Veda base if you have access to that. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born in 1838. In a village named Bernagar, also known as Ulagram. And it's described how he was born into a very wealthy family. His grandfather on his mother's side was extremely wealthy, and his mother also had wealth, and the town itself was very prosperous at the time. And it's described how people would actually be singing and during the day and dancing. If they had anything that they needed, they would approach his mother, or then they could approach the grandfather also. And so it was a very happy time that he was born into. But as we'll see, over time, he went through many difficulties just on the material side. All the money was eventually lost. He was practically poverty-stricken. And one illness after another attacked Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But he overcame all of the difficulties and became a great savior of the Vaishnav, the Gaudiya Vaishnav religion, or Gaudiya Vaishnav culture. So it's important to understand the environment that he was born into. It was the height of the British Raj, and the British had developed this understanding. They knew a little bit about, you know, the Vedas, and they read the Mahabharata, and they were very much against it. By and large, those who were ruling were very derisive of the Vedic culture. They would deride it. They said, "Oh, they, you know, compared to they have rivers of sugarcane juice, and they have kings living for 30,000 years, and you know, it's just a lot of mythology." And so they felt that they needed to reform the Vedic culture and to teach the people about Christianity and science, you know, and all of these things. So, but it's a huge job. It's a huge population, and they knew that they couldn't educate everybody. So they felt that they would try to educate those who were intelligent, a certain class, and that through them they would then be able to control the whole population and reform the population. This was the plan. So Bhaktivinoda, in his early life, he was known as Kedarnath Dutt. He was born into a family, and it's interesting to see the history. It wasn't Gaudiya Vaishnav family. They were worshipping Durga. And in his early days, he saw a lot of that. And it didn't exactly manifest. His Vaishnav character did not manifest right away. Similar to Lord Chaitanya, where he didn't immediately start dancing and chanting. He took the role of a pundit. Of course, he was Vaishnav family, but it wasn't immediately obvious. So there was the question of education. It was very clear early on that he possessed a very keen intellect. It was extremely intelligent. So, but the schooling was irregular. There was a school here, a school there, but they were teaching him English. He learned English. And he also was exposed to all these Western philosophers and Christianity, the Bible as well. And so there's a nice poem he wrote. After a while, he began writing poems in the classic English style, you know, think Byron and Keats and those guys, you know. And he became very good at it. So one of the things about Kedarnath Dutt is that he had a keen philosophical mind. it's noted in the biography here how he wouldn't just play with all of the other kids, you know. He was, a lot of times he would be reflecting, he would be reading, and he would be asking eternal questions. And so there's this nice poem that he wrote early on. This was, he was born in 38. Let me just bring this back a little bit. Okay. So this describes. All right. So he was very precocious and learning. And so he entered college at age 18 and was enrolled in the Hindu school. This was in Calcutta. Later became known as the University of Calcutta. And as I said, he was exposed to all of these philosophers, these Western philosophers. Later on, he wrote a book called The Tattva Viveka, which is reminiscent of Prabhupada's conversations about the philosophers, where he would refute the philosophers of the day in this Tattva Viveka book. So he's reading, and he's exposed to all these philosophers, and then he wrote this poem, which kind of he expresses his philosophical search. And he says, "Now sad reflection clouds his mental realm, and questions past our thought his heart to overwhelm. From whom is life, and whence this frame of man? What mighty power has formed this mighty plan? Why live we here, and why desire and feel? For what we turn with time's revolving wheel? I eat and live and sleep and spend the day, but never think of these. My life is gay. From this awakening hour, I let my eyes select my way, led by the guiding skies. This day I leave my ever gorgeous vest to visit lands extending to the west. Ye woods, be witness, I my country leave and come not back until my end achieve." So this little poem, he's saying, I'm not going to just live an ordinary life trying to enjoy. I'm on this philosophical quest to find out, why do I live? Why do I exist? So this is the state of his mind at this time. He's 18 years old. He wrote this in 1856 in college, and he was born in 1838. So, we did that. As I said, he was in this milieu of the British Raj, and he was being educated. So it describes here how Kedarnath was fascinated by theism, and he spent his time studying the Bible, the Koran, and the works of Parker and Newman. I don't know who they were, they were Christian philosophers. He developed deep faith in Jesus Christ. And later on, he wrote this essay about this famous saying. I mean, I'm not a biblical scholar by any means, but this one saying, you know, love thy God with all thy heart and all thy mind and all thy strength, you know. He focused on that. He quoted it, and he wrote a whole essay, this is much later, describing how those go through the five rasas. Believe it or not, he related them. It's quite fascinating later on. So, then later on, his grandfather, on his father's side, was dying. This is a famous interaction, Raja Vallabha Dutt. And he was in a different town, and he wanted to see him. And he was somewhat of a mystic yogi. There's a lot of that in this biography. How he would come in touch with tantrics and so forth. And his father, this grandfather, had some mystic powers, and he could predict the day of his death, and he could foresee the future to some degree. So here's some interaction here. His father was very sick, but when he got there, you know, he heard that his grandfather was sick. He looked pretty healthy, you know, but his grandfather had called for him, and he knew that although he looked healthy, he was going to come down with this disease and die very shortly. The grandfather told him, "Do not leave here for 1 or 2 days. My life is coming to an end." On the third day thereafter, his grandfather had a slight fever. He sat upon a bed in the courtyard of his house, leaning against a bolster, and he began to continuously chant the holy name. Bhaktivinoda Thakur recounts in his memoirs. "He called for me and said, 'After my death, do not tarry many days in this place. Whatever work you do, by the age of 27, will be your principal occupation.'" Now, this proved to be true. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gradually got different positions. He became a teacher in a school, and he became a clerk and an accountant, one after another. But when he was in 27, he was appointed to the court and became a magistrate. And sure enough, that was his work thereafter. You will become a great Vaishnav. This is an amazing prediction because it hadn't manifested all yet. I give you all my blessings. Immediately after saying this, his life left him, bursting out from the top of his head. Such an amazing death is rarely seen. These are the words of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he was a great yogi, and he was predicting the future of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So then a large part of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's work was combating the misconceptions of Chaitanya Vaishnavism that had grown up after the disappearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his leading followers. As you probably read, if you read the introduction to the songbook, there's a nice little summary of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life, a glimpse into the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And I'm just going to read this little section here, how publication was so important. It's kind of Krishna's arrangement. This is the BBT Samala, if you will. But so much of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's work was presenting the genuine Chaitanya Shastra, especially Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, beginning with those, authentically to combat all the misconceptions that had grown up through publication of bogus versions of the Shastra. Well, listen to this. Between 1816 and 1829, now this was all before Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared, many authentic Vaishnava works, such as Narottam Vilas, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Hari Bhakti Vilas, and Srimad Bhagavatam, were published in limited editions. But after this important work of publication was somehow neglected. Publishing fell into the hands of the printers and publishers of North Calcutta called Bharatala Publishers. They were aware of the great demand for Vaishnava works in the rural areas. So the simple people really wanted to get this literature. They were aware of this. They printed many translations of Vaishnava classics on cheap paper and with inferior type. But the translations were very bad and made from notoriously apocryphal manuscripts. To make matters worse, they brought out numerous editions of concocted Sahajiya scriptures, and these works became very popular with the simple-hearted people in the villages. And it mentions the principal publisher. The result was that the Sahajiya groups and their teachings proliferated and became very popular with the common people. And confusion about the actual teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Goswamis was rampant. This terrible situation was later greatly remedied by the powerful preaching of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and others, and the authentic works with the original commentaries of the Acharyas were brought forward once again, especially by the efforts of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his son Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta's disciple Srila Prabhupada. So this publishing was the main way that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was combating this actual corruption of Lord Chaitanya's teachings. Very important point. So now, for a long time, after some time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur eventually came in touch with genuine Vaishnavism, and he was trying to get a copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and for years he couldn't find one. This was the state in which genuine Chaitanya Vaishnavism had fallen. He couldn't even find a copy of the CC in manuscript form. So this next section describes how he finally got these books, and it changed everything. Because he was into this philosophy, it's all Leela, but he manifests his full Gaudiya Vaishnava nature after getting this. So in March of 1968, Bhaktivinoda was appointed deputy magistrate of Dinajpur. His health improved, and to his delight, he found many Vaishnavas residing there under the patronage of the great Zamindar Rai Saheb Kamala Lochan, who was a descendant of Ramananda Vasu, a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya. He was a contemporary. Kedarnath writes, "In Dinajpur, the Vaishnava religion was fairly strong due to Rai Kamala Lochan. There were many renunciants and Goswamis coming and going there. A few wealthy persons were supporting many assemblies of Brahmin pundits. Respectable gentlemen would regularly come to discuss the Vaishnava Dharma with me. I had the desire to know what the genuine Vaishnava Dharma was." To this point, he hadn't fully satisfied his curiosity. "I wrote to our agent, Chandra Roy, and he sent a published translation of Bhagavatam and Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. I also bought the book called Bhaktamala. On my first reading of Chaitanya Charitamrita, I developed some faith in Sri Chaitanya. On the second reading, I understood that there was no pundit equal to Lord Chaitanya. Then I had a doubt. Being such a learned scholar and having manifested the reality of love of Godhead to such an extent, how is it that he recommends the worship of the improper character of Krishna? So this is coming straight from the English. You know, Krishna, he's dancing with others' wives, he's stealing, you know, he's lying. You know, this is how they saw it in there with their material vision. And this was coming to Bhaktivinoda in his education. So he still has some of these doubts. So now listen to this. I was initially amazed at this, and I thought about it deeply. Afterwards, I prayed to the Lord with great humility. O Lord, please let me understand the mystery of this matter. The mercy of God is without limit. Seeing my eagerness and humbleness, within a few days he bestowed his mercy upon me and supplied the intelligence by which I could understand. I then understood that the truth of Krishna is very deep and confidential and the highest principle of the science of Godhead. From this time on, I knew God as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I made an effort to always speak with renounced Vaishnava pundits, and I came to understand many aspects of the Vaishnava Dharma. In my very childhood, the seed of faith in the Vaishnava religion was planted in my heart, and now it had sprouted. From the beginning, I experienced anuraga, and it was very wonderful. So he was experiencing now ecstatic love for Krishna. So you can see how, you know, we take it for granted. We open up the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and there is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary translated by Prabhupada, his Anubhashya and Bhaktisiddhanta's, and it's given as it is. But in another place he says, how difficult it is to get rid of misconceptions we acquire in our childhood, you know. And so we're very fortunate that, you know, it's been presented to us. As it is by the efforts of these three great saints, Bhaktivinoda, Bhaktisiddhanta, and Srila Prabhupada. So a very important turning point there. Now from this point on, you know, he was just on fire with the preaching mood. And another thing he had to combat, so he's combating the all of this misconceptions of the English that they're planting in the youth of the day, the intelligent young man of India. He's now also combating the Sahajiya influence, which is the homegrown misconceptions. And so one of the things that developed was this Brahmo Samaj, which was a kind of a mixture of Western philosophy and impersonalism with a touch of Vaishnava. It was a big concoction. And a lot of the young men were being attracted to that. So this is what he's combating. So one of the things that he did, this was in the 1868, early 69, he gave this talk called The Bhagavad, Its Philosophy, Its Ethics, and Theology. And this has been brought out. I don't know if that's still available. Is that in the Veda base? It may be in the Veda base. But it's a fascinating talk. And there was apparently he wrote it down, and it was given in English. So this is a little section on what a description of that address. In that lecture, he openly criticized the sectarianism that characterized the religious strife between the Hindus and the Brahmos. So the Hindus were becoming very upset at the Brahma Samaj because they were denigrating pure Vaishnavism. They were denigrating personal worship, what to speak of all the other worship of the demigods and all these things. So they were very upset, and there was this big fight between the Brahma Samaj and the Hindus. Bhaktivinoda no doubt intended to instruct the angry Hindus, but at the same time he explained the defects of the Brahmos, thinking while simultaneously glorifying the Bhagavatam, this great and universal message. The reader can easily make out the great art of the sadhu therein, as he cuts the illusion and attachment of the conditioned souls, but at the same time presents the truth so palatably, poetically, and expertly, that all his hearers were pleased rather than offended. In the following excerpt, I'm not going to read it, it's very long, the Thakur gently points out the glaring defect of Ram Mohan Roy, he was the head of the Brahma Samaj, his neglect of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So one thing to remember, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had been trained in the law. He was this magistrate by this time. And so his art of speaking and convincing was highly developed. And he used all of those skills. He dovetailed them in his convincing speech that he's giving here on the Bhagavad, its philosophy and theology. So also, if you permit me, he was all writing this poetry. And he would write Bengali. He also was writing in Sanskrit, but he also wrote in English. And this poem is very famous, this Saragrahi Vaishnav poem. And here he's just, you know, he's calling us, all of us, to, you know, cast off of the illusion of material life and to take to the realm, to the path of pure Vaishnavism. So I'm just going to read it. It's not that long. Alas for those that spend their days in festive mirth and joy, the dazzling deadly liquid forms their heart for air employ. The shining bottles charm their eyes and draw their heart's embrace. The slaves of wine can never rise from what we call disgrace. Was man intended to be a brute in work and heart? Should man, the lord of all around, from common sense depart? Man's glory is in common sense, dictating us the grace that man is made to live and love the beauteous heavens embrace. The flesh is not our own, alas, the mortal frame a chain. The soul confined for former wrongs should try to rise again. Why then this childish play in that which cannot be our own, which falls within 100 years as if a rose ablown? A rose means one rose. Our life is but a rosy hue to go ere long to naught. The soul alone will last for'er with good or evil fraught. How deep the thought of times to be, how grave the aspect looks, and wrapped in awe become, oh, I, when reading nature's books. Man's life to him a problem dark, a screen both left and right. No soul hath come to tell us what exists beyond our sight. But then a voice, how deep and soft, within ourselves is left. Man, felt. Man, thou art immortal soul, thee death can never melt. For thee thy sire on high has kept the store of bliss above. To end of time thou art, oh, his who once but purest love. O love, thy power and spell benign, now melt my soul to God. How can my earthly words describe that feeling soft and broad? Enjoyment, sorrow, what but lots to which the flesh is heir? The soul that sleeps alone concludes in them it hath a share. The soul that sleeps, only sleep in Maya. The soul that sleeps alone concludes in him that hath a share. And then, my friends, no more enjoy, no weep for all below. The women, wine, and flesh of beasts no love on thee bestow. But thine to love thy brother, man, and give thyself to God. And God doth know your wages fair. This fact is true and broad. Forget the past that sleeps, and ne'er the future dream at all. But act in times that are with thee, and progress thee shall call. This is probably the most famous stanza there. But tell me not in reasoning cold, the soul is made alone by earth's mechanic, lifeless rules, and to destruction prone. My God, who gave us life and all, alone the soul can kill, or give it all the joys above his promise to fulfill. So push on thy onward march, O soul, against an evil deed that stands with soldiers, hate, and lust. A hero be indeed. Maintain thy post in spirit world as firmly as you can. Let never matter push thee down, O stand, heroic man. O Saragrahi Vaishnav soul, thou art an angel fair. Lead me on to Vrindavan, and spirit's power declare. There rests my soul for matter free upon my lover's arms. Eternal peace and spirit's love are all my chanting charms. So that's his poem. You say, where's Krishna? Where's Krishna? Then he's speaking about Vrindavan. You know, he's obviously speaking. But he has this broader audience he's speaking to, you know, the Christians. So now, he writes an essay called To Love God, published in a journal in 1871. And it was all about this saying from Jesus. And I'll just read the beginning here. It was Jesus Christ who first said, love thy God with all thy heart, with all thy mind, and all thy soul, with all thy strength, and love man as thy brother. This is an absolute truth indeed, but different men put different interpretations to this noble expression. And then he explains it in terms of the different rasas of bhakti. Okay. Now, one of the most famous stories and well told and highly recorded is this chastisement of Bhishikishen. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur was appointed as the chief, the head of the Puri temple in Jagannath Puri by the British, and also as a magistrate, There were a lot of these bogus yogis and gods that were in the area, and they were creating havoc. And they were, because a lot of the simple people began to believe in them and to worship them. And so this Bishi Kishen was a great disturbance. He was predicting that he was going to destroy all the British in England and also kill the King of England. In other words, he was a revolutionary as well as being a nonsense. And so they appointed, the English didn't know what to do because he had thousands of followers. He had developed some mystic powers. And he could cure people. You know, it describes he could go into fire and come out, he wouldn't be burned, you know, do a lot of these magic tricks. And people were completely enthralled with him. They had a lot of followers. So the British couldn't just arrest him. So they gave the job to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You do it. So the story, I'll just tell it the way I remember it. It's quite dramatic. So the main thing to remember, he was completely fearless here. You know, the British were afraid of him. You know, because he had these mystic powers, they didn't know what to make of him, and he had all these followers. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, by this, I mean, he completely felt he was protected by Krishna, and that he had to. This was part of his preaching as well of his service to the British, to the rulers, to get rid of this guy. So he went first with a small group. He was outside of town. He lived in like a suburb of Puri, in a country area in the forest. So it describes how Bhaktivinoda Thakur came with a few constables, you know, and he confronted this Bishi Kishen. So Bishi Kishen said, I know why you've come here, you know. And he started saying things about Bhaktivinoda's life, describing how he had this so many children and this and that. He could tell, you know, mystic powers. He was trying to frighten him off. So Bhaktivinoda asked him, well, what are you up to? He said, well, I'm Mahavishnu, you know. And people have come to worship me. And Bhaktivinoda said, why don't you go to Puri and worship the real God there, Jagannath? He said, Jagannath, that Jagannath, he's just a wooden slab. Woo. You know, major offense. But all of his people were around him. So Bhaktivinoda said, he caught him up on it. You are an imposter. And if you don't come with me, you know, to answer to these charges, we'll have to arrest you. And so at that point, if I recall, Bishi Kishen was, you know, he shook his head and so many sparks came out of his hair, you know, and all of the British constables were like too super frightened. They backed off, you know. So Bhaktivinoda wasn't impressed. He said, I'm not impressed by your magic tricks. You know, if you don't come, we're going to come back and arrest you. So, you know, then he brought a whole bunch of people forward who had disease. They would come by the hundreds, you know, people who had diseases. He cured them all, you know, just to show his powers. And the people were like, yay, you know. All glories to Bishi Kishen. You can imagine 1,000 people, you know. So it was a very testy situation. So Bhaktivinoda left and came back some time later with like 100 men, you know, a big contingent. And the same thing happened. You know, he wasn't ready to go, but after a while he surrendered. He had to go with the Thakur. So he goes in this cart, and the people are aghast. All of his followers, they're up in arms, you know, but there's a big armed contingent of policemen who had stopped. So they took him to Puri, and they put him in a jail, and the trial commenced. And every day there's demonstrations outside the jail, release Bishi Kishen, you know how they do, you know. Even today, you know, someone they want released. And the British, you know, there was a major contingent of soldiers surrounding the jail, and Bhaktivinoda was bringing the charges, and there was no question. And one of the main things that brought it forward, he would have these fake rasa dances, and he was seducing, you know, the respectable ladies of some of the Brahmins in the area, and that, you know, that kind of brought everything to a head. They were aghast at that, you know. So, but he still had his followers coming to this jail and protesting into the courtroom. So, Bhaktivinoda was immovable. You know, he kept bringing the charges. So after some days of this, and Bishi Kishen wasn't eating, wasn't drinking, wasn't sleeping. You know, yeah, and you can imagine, he's a yogi, he has his huge hair hanging down, you know, with the matted hair, you know, fierce eyes, you know. And but Bhaktivinoda wasn't impressed. So then one day near the end of the trial, he told the, you know, he said, Thakur, you know, go home and see the calamity that has come upon you. So Bhaktivinoda went home at the end of the proceedings, and his youngest daughter, what was her name? Kadambani, I think. She had come down with a disease. She couldn't stay awake. She couldn't say anything. She had a high fever, you know. And his wife, his second wife, who had many of the children, she was, you know, let him go. You know, said, stop the, he's going to kill our family. And Bhaktivinoda said, well, let us all die, but this Bhishyakeshaya must be stopped. This was his determination, you know. So the next morning, they had some cure. The next morning, she was okay. The girl was fine, you know. In other words, it wasn't a real disease. It was a little trick that he put. So back to the courtroom, more trial, and he goes back again. On the last day of the trial, Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself feels this sharp pain in his side. You know, before the night before the final judgment, and he can hardly breathe. You know, so he takes rest. Next morning, it hasn't improved. He had to be carried to the court on a palanquin. You know, and the judgment that he gave was, yes, you're seditious. You know, 18 months in jail was the thing, and there was this huge uproar, and the British who would study the literature, they had, this fellow Ravenshaw, I think it was, he had read that the yogis keep their strength in their hair. So as the Bhishyakeshaya was being led out of the courtroom, he came up behind him with his big shears and cut off all his hair, you know, gave him a haircut. And as soon as the hair was off, he melted, you know, he hadn't eaten or slept or anything for a week or more. He melted down to the floor. He had to be carried out of the courtroom. And the pain in Bhaktivinoda's side and the disease was completely, immediately gone. This is the kind of things he was dealing with. So, and then then they transferred him to another prison, and a few weeks later, or a month later, he died. He took poison and died. So this was a tremendous, victory of the Thakurs, and showed his fearlessness in the face of real danger, you know, and opposition. And this was obviously passed on to his son and to Srila Prabhupada, and this whole, you know, thing. Full faith in the protection of Krishna, even in the greatest danger and difficulty, to never lose one's focus and one's determination. And there were other instances like that also, where, you know, fake Balaram, fake Shiva, and that he was able to tamp down. And he also, of course, he brought the worship in the Puri temple to great regularity and cleanliness and everything. So wherever he went. Now all this time, now the British, they loved him. They all wanted him to come to their city and be the magistrate, or be the, you know. So he was very popular with everybody, just like the Goswamis. Okay, so then, but all this time, he still hadn't been initiated. And there was one Vaishnav, you know, who many would come and see. He didn't wear tilak, and he wasn't wearing the beads, because he felt that had to be given by the Diksha Guru. So he wasn't wearing that. But he was, you know, pure Vaishnav by this time. But still, he felt the need for initiation. But just one incident, he was controversial. He was challenging a lot of the established things that were going on. And so there was an attempt on his life. And this is, we've heard how there's so many offerings to Jagannath every day, over 50 offerings. Well, this is how it came about. Lalit Prasad, his eldest son, he describes in his biographical notes that an attempt was made on the life of Bhaktivinoda by the king of Puri. In 1874, now this is, Bhaktivinoda is now 36 years old, 80,000 rupees, this is a big sum, it's a fortune, were misappropriated from the Jagannath temple by the Raj. The Thakur learned of this and punished the king by obliging him to offer Lord Jagannath offerings, cooked food, 52 times a day. This was the punishment. The Raja's treasury was soon depleted. And in anger, he decided to avenge himself by assassinating the Thakur. The Thakur's position, by this time he was promoted and given full powers of magistrate with specific responsibility for the Jagannath temple. The Thakur's position was very strong, and he was popular and famous in the district. Thus, as he would have immediately been arrested, the Raj could not risk killing him by ordinary means. So he had to have a secret conspiracy. The king therefore organized a secret fire sacrifice in the inner apartments of the palace, with 50 pundits in attendance chanting mantras with the intention of killing the Thakur by mystic influence. Although all of this was conducted with the utmost secrecy, Still, the information leaked out because Thakur had informants in the king's court. After 30 days of this sacrifice, when the last oblation of clarified butter was being poured on the fire, the Thakur was to have died. But instead, at that very moment, the king's dear and only son perished within the palace. In recalling this period in his autobiography, the Thakur says indirectly, he didn't make a big deal out of it, "The king and other persons connected with the temple used to commit many illegal acts. I would go there to prevent all such things, and thus I made enemies of the king and the king's men. Because I was helped by Jagannath, no one was able to harm me in any way." Amazing. I mean, this is an amazing incident like this. But just see, truth to power. You know, he feels just like Prahlad. You know, he had no fear of the powerful king or the powerful corrupt king like this. Very interesting. Okay, so we don't have all that much time, but we have no breakfast today. So, meanwhile, of course, he's starting to write, and the writing is going. The first major book was the Krishna Samhita, published in 1880. And it received critical acclaim by the English also. This was written in English. And the English also received critical acclaim. And it describes Krishna consciousness from many different points of view. And it's a very important first book like that. He also wrote the Kalyana Kalpataru. This is familiar. It's a song book. The Desire of Auspiciousness, which describes spiritual life from beginning stages to the highest levels of transcendence. And so he's now, the pen is like working amazingly. You know, he's writing constantly and producing many, many books. So now the initiation comes. And this was in, shortly thereafter, in the early 1880s. The Thakur was feeling an urgent need to take initiation from some suitable guru. He relates, "I had been searching for a suitable guru for a long time, but I did not obtain one. I was very unhappy. I was feeling very anxious, and in a dream, Mahaprabhu diminished my unhappiness." And then one or two days later, Vipini Bihari Goswami wrote a letter to me saying he will come and give him diksha. And so he took a diksha from Vipini Bihari, and he praises him, writes very nicely of him in the Srimad Bhagavatam Marichi Mala, which is a lot of important verses from the Bhagavatam that he gives and explains. Also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita comments. So this was his initiating guru. Later on, there was some falling out, especially over the yoga peat, where the appearance was. So in our list, now it's important to know this, all the devotees should know that our parampara, as it's given at the end of the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, as it's given in the song of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which is the source of that list, is a diksha parampara. It's not that there aren't, shiksha parampara, meaning the most prominent shiksha gurus, instructing gurus, are given. Many of them are diksha relationships, but many of them are not. And that's why you will not read about Vipini Bihari Goswami there, but you will read Jagannath Das Babaji, who he met very shortly thereafter. And he began taking a lot of shiksha from Jagannath Das Babaji. And later on, Jagannath Das Babaji came and joined Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Navadvip, when he was living there. And he would spend half his time there and half his time in Vrindavan. So he went on a pilgrimage. Bhaktivinoda went on a pilgrimage to Vrindavan, and there he met Jagannath Das Babaji. And that's how the relationship was cemented. And it was entirely a shiksha relationship, but he's so highly regarded that he appears in the parampara list. And, of course, shortly thereafter, we have the discovery of the yoga peat. This is one of the great contributions of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is locating the actual spot where Lord Chaitanya appeared in this world, which is famous as the yoga peat. Many of you have been to Mayapur, you've seen that spot. And the temple itself, that was also a big effort. And it describes how Bhaktivinoda Thakur would go around begging after he retired to raise that wonderful temple there. And it's now under the care of the Gaudiya Math. Toward the beginning of 1888, that's when he discovered this yoga peat. And I'll just read a few little more things. I'll describe a few little things here that there were many maps. He consulted old maps and other Vaishnavas, because there had been some confusion. What we now know as Navadvip, which is across the Ganges, had been thought to be the place of the appearance. And there were many advocates of that spot. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur wasn't buying it. And so he consulted all these old maps and old manuscripts, and he went to the spot that is known as the Yogapit, and he saw there were a lot of tulsis growing there, you know. And later on, when they excavated for the temple, they found a deity that Jagannath Das Babaji, excuse me, that Jagannath Mishra had planted there, had buried there. And this was further confirmation that this was the actual spot. So the big confirmation came. He brought Jagannath Das Babaji there. Now, by this time, he was 120 years old. He couldn't walk, and he was carried around on the back of his stout disciple in a basket. But when he came, when they brought him to that spot, he said, eto nimai janmabhumi. You know, he shouted and he jumped out of that basket and started dancing. So this is the best confirmation it could be, the realized confirmation. So that is a great contribution of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And just one or two more things. In his, you know, he's writing these songs, and one of the most famous songs is a song about the Namhata, you know, how Nityananda Prabhu opened the marketplace of the holy name. A hut is a marketplace, you know. And by this time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was retiring, or before he retired, he built this house that's very famous across the Jalangi, the Swananda Sukhada Kunj, known as Surbi Kunj at that time. And this was the actual spot historically where Nityananda started his preaching in Bengal. And so he wrote that song, and he incorporates this instruction that Lord Chaitanya gave to Nityananda and Haridas. When he sent them out preaching, you know, the most famous incident is Jagai and Madai. They would go out to each home in Navadvip, and they would say, Bolo Krishna, Bojo Krishna, Koro Krishna, Shika. And this was the you know, sutra that they would chant to everybody, which means just chant Shri Krishna's name and worship him with all your heart. Follow his instructions and to others them impart. So we can also take that and we can follow that instruction. So he's wrote the song based on that, and it's a very moving song. Nityananda, he opened this marketplace of the holy name, and he's selling the holy name, and the only price is your faith. Yeah. That's the only price you have to pay. That if you have faith, then you can buy the holy name and you can become exalted and pure. So, a couple of more little things. So then, the flow of books, you know. In 1893, a great deluge of books was coming. And I won't list all of them. Tattva Vivek, Sharanagati, Gita Mala, and later on, Jiva Dharma, which is the most comprehensive encyclopedic work, which really gives the entire philosophy of Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy in the form of a novel. You know, it's very skilled, presents it. Just philosophy, it's hard to just read straight philosophy, you know. But there's a plot there, you know, so you read it. And it's many conversations presented, you know, like that. So the Bhagavatam is like that too, right? So it's very brilliant. He did another one, Prema Pradeep. It's not as famous. It's about yogi, about, you know, Ashtanga Yoga, how that also comes to bhakti ultimately. And then finally, just, I'll skip this because it's getting too long. But retirement. In 1894, he retired. Was it 1894? Yeah, he retired from government because he was too busy preaching by this time, you know. And he had a pension, of course. And at a certain point later on, he was getting, you know, writing books, and he would also go around house to house with a chanting party, you know, and he would chant, he would approach the people one on one in their homes, you know, and do just what Nityananda and Haridas were doing. And then at a certain point, he took Babaji from Gorkhishore Das Babaji, who didn't want to give it. He kind of had, you know, Gorgeous was very humble. He didn't want to give it, but he kind of prevailed upon him. And then he shut himself up, and he just took Babaji, and he was just hearing and chanting. And he wrote, his final work was these, was it 8 or 9 or 10 vows, I think it was, that he took. And just like Raghunath Das Goswami, he also wrote famously these vows. So there's infinitely more to be said about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but the things to mostly that we take away and we remember about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he, you know, all our three main pillars of this great edifice of International Society of Krishna Consciousness, that without any one of them we wouldn't be sitting here. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and of course Srila Prabhupada. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur performed this incredible task of reviving the genuine Chaitanya Vaishnavism. Without him, it would have been completely obscured. You know, you'd have a few genuine Gaudiya Vaishnavas doing Babaji in Vrindavan, you know, to this day, who knows what. But by his great effort, and you can see, you know, Krishna's overall plan, training him in English, you know, what good would that do to us if it had never left India? Maybe it had been revived in India, but, you know, it has to be come into English and into all the other languages and go around the world, you know. So he was highly trained in English. He was able to write in English and train his son in English, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who saw the importance of it and, you know, instructed Prabhupada to preach in English. And most importantly, you know, he gave us his own writings and his son, who continued, you know, the whole process, emphasizing publishing literature, and giving us the teachings of the Goswamis, you know, Rupa Goswami and all the others in their genuine form, so that we can know what to do and follow the actual process and the philosophical structure. So this was his incredible achievement, of reviving Chaitanya Vaishnavism. Emphasizing, obviously, the publication and distribution of literature, and producing his wonderful, you know, pure devotee son, a Naishtika Brahmachari, empowered preacher, and predictions, you know, even this predicting the Adbhuta Mandir, the wonderful, seeing in his vision that's rising now. So we owe our very spiritual lives, you know, to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and this is a wonderful day to remember him in all these aspects. Thank you very much. If there's anything to add, I don't know if we have any time, but I think it's a little late, so we can adjourn, and half-day fast, and all glories to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Hare Hare Bol.
Channing and Newman, they were the Unitarians of their day.